You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Chazal tell us that this was a very, very sinister plan on her part. It seems it was an idolatrous holiday. Everybody went to whatever the church was in Egypt at that time. She played sick, the Medrash says. And all of a sudden, with him and her in the house alone, she solicited him. And she said, I want to commit a sexual activity with you. I want to basically sleep with you. And the fact of the matter is, you see the Vayyama'ain, if you're a good Balkare, now you kvetch this out. He was screaming, no. But the Gemara tells us that she didn't just ask him once. She had an endless wardrobe. She was a rich lady. And every hour upon the other hour, she put on a different sexually oriented garb to try to sexually arouse this poor guy. She literally tried every way to literally sexually attract him and to get him to succumb. And then the Medrash says, the Gemara, it's a Gemara, that after she saw that didn't work, she then started threatening him. You know my husband is, you work for him, he's the Sa'at HaPachim. If I say 1 ounce of Lashon Hara that you want to do something bad to me, you're finished. We'll put you in prison, we'll blind you, we'll chop your head off. So she literally used every kayak she had of Ashvah to convince this boy Yosef to succumb. So this Shalshala shows you, he was screaming, yelling, no. Now, if you look carefully over here, his major reason is, besides the fact your husband trusted me, he also said, Ech esa haragdol hazos chatasi lelokim. I'm a religious guy here.
That should have been his first answer. She couldn't comprehend it. That won't impress her. His
first attempt was the smart one. Your husband trusted me with everything except for you, so how can I violate that trust? That should understand. Mm-hmm. That should understand.
She doesn't understand God.
Forget about God. Now, but he could die with Yosef Yom Yom, it seems that this must have been a long religious holiday because they were out of the house for a good couple of days. And for the next couple of days, the Gemachtem Namash Mamash Meshigga. So, it tells us...
Why couldn't Yosef just walk out?
What?
Why couldn't Yosef just walk out?
Because if he ran away, she told him. If you run away, what's going to happen? I'm going to say that you tried to hurt me, whatever it is. So he'll be a wanted man. He'll be killed. He won't have a chance to even explain himself. So what happened? Look, as you go to Pasuk Aleph, Beikar Yom Hazeh, finally, in the absence of everybody else, he came to do his work. And some say that Yosef was so worn down, some of Farshim explained, he was ready just to give in and just get her off his back already, or maybe get her on his back, but it's generally going to look upon it. And it says, Vatispeseo bibigdo, she grabbed his clothing. Once again, Shichfa imi, Vayazo bigdo biyodo vayonis vayetza chutza. She grabbed his clothing. She wanted to grab him to bed. He ran out and he went outside. And if you notice, the expression is repeated 3 more times. Next pasuk, Vayonas achutza. Then you see it again in pasuk tezvav, Vayonas vayetze achutza. If you look later on the left hand side of the page, when she tells the story over, she mentions once again that what happened, Vayonas achutza. So everybody asks the $1 million question. What was Yosef's secret to save himself? And how in the world was he able to build enough kayach to literally hold her off? So Rashi comments, no problem. He saw the demust yukna shalav. So everybody asked the question, when was the last time you saw a person about to sin? That all of a sudden he looks on the wall and he sees a picture of the Tata or the Zayda, all of a sudden that changes their mind from incredible temptation to sin. I mean, there's a famous joke that they have, you know, in the street, that somebody once went into a butcher shop, into a new community to buy meat, and he looked at the guy behind the counter selling the meat, like a kosher meat, and he wasn't very comfortable. This guy didn't look that he was so reliable. So he says, who's your Rav HaMashir? He says, who's my Rav HaMashir? He says, look at the wall. You don't see my Zaydis picture? His Zaydis picture, Gazetas, we were building the Gaon, the Avionis and Ibishitz. So the guy said to the guy behind the counter, if your Zayda was here was selling the meat and your picture was on the wall, I feel more comfortable. But the problem is his picture's on the wall and you're behind the counter and I'm not very comfortable. And the fact that his Zayda's picture there wasn't basically enough proof to him that this guy was going to basically give him kosher meat. A Dinechem B'Surim was not said by this guy. So the fact of the matter, what do you mean, dude, most do you know? And it's very strange because in Hebrew, a picture usually is tumunah. When was the last time a person says, I see a picture, they use a dumusti yukna? It's a very unusual expression. So I want to share with you tonight a Chassam Sefer, where the Chassam Sefer says, I'm going to explain to you what dumusti yukna is. This is important. Of the shir, this is perhaps one of the most important akudos of tonight's shir. He says, dumusti yukna, first of all, the expression, the first time it's used in the Torah, nas od betzalmenu ukedemusenu, dumus. Let's make man in our image and our likeness. So over here, demus is not used as merely a picture. It means it's a certain quality of special personality traits that demus basically connotes. What Chazal tell us, Sev Yosef was not a picture of his father, but the Hashkafa and the Torah and the role model example and what his father literally put into him, especially those private sessions he had with him as a Ben Zakunim, that left an indelible impression in his mind and heart when it comes to what kind of person he should be and how he's going to survive in this world and the tricks and the techniques that a Yaakov himself used to survive a lover and all that was thrown against him. So Demusti Yukta means all of a sudden came into his mind what his father had taught him when it came to his survival tactic. And what did his father teach him? His father taught him that in the Bris Bein HaBesarim, when the Rabban Hashem promised indestructibility, when the Rabban Hashem promised you're going to be able to function mechutz miderach hateva, that's only with one proviso that your kavanos that you have are l'shem shemayim, and you're doing the ratzon Hashem and fulfilling Hashem's ratzon in what you're doing. If you do that, I promise you indestructibility. And I also promise you that you'll function even mechutz miderach hateva. That was the message Yaakov gave over to Yosef as the Ben Zakunim. And Yosef now realized, I'm now faced with a survival problem. Because whatever I do over here, I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't. You know, either God's going to destroy me if I succumb, or he's going to destroy me, show malshin upon me, so I'm a finished guy. So how am I going to survive this? So he remembers what his father taught him before this Hamaisa ever took place. The Musti Yukna, the Hashkafas Aviv. And that is, if you act with Hashem Shemayim, and you basically say to Hashem, help me, get me out of this matzav, which is a mission impossible, your Rabban Hashem will perform, whether it's an open miracle or a hidden miracle, and you will survive mechutz miderach hateva. The Chassam Sefer says, how do I know that's what happened over here? Look at the expression vayanus and hachutza. In actuality, it's really a double expression saying the same thing. I think if you're running away, of course you went outside. So what do you have to say vayanus and hachutza? He says, what's vayanus and hachutza? So he says, the word vayanus is a lashon of ness. That the Rabban Hashem records four times over here that his survival against her was a ness, and what was a ness? That he was able to not succumb, which is mechutz miderach hateva. Miderach hateva, he should have collapsed.
That's the chutz when he tells Avraham Avinu.
Exactly.
Chutzah.
That's the chutz. So the Chassam Sefer says, why is it mentioned four times over here that it was a ness that he survived her and he didn't succumb? And it was mechutz miderach hateva, but the demusi ashkafis aviv of that mesaris of the bris bein abesarim is what gave him the strength of character and the guts not to be worried about her husband, not to be worried about her, only to be worried about the Rabbeinu Shalom, and therefore that is what saved him. Not the picture of his father, but the hashkafis aviv, the demusi yukno, the essence, the personality, the divine qualities of the Avos and the Bris Avos and what they represent and how do they succeed against the impossible, those hashkafas kept them going by Yonas Hakutza.
Does he discuss the extra three repetitions?
Some claim that four times, because in the Bris Ben Yisrael there were four different promises, but all the promises are predicated upon this concept. Okay. Now, so if that's the case, what do we see? That even the things that are b'derech hateva impossible, when you do it l'shem shemayim, Hashem says you're indestructible and you'll succeed shalei b'derech hateva. Chazal will now explain why Chanuk was put before Parshas Vayeshev to explain the mindset of the Chashmonaim Kohanim. B'derech hateva, there's no way they could have b'derech hateva defeated the Greek army. Impossible. But they realized, in Menach Shevein aside, we don't do anything, and we allow Klai Yisrael to convert to the Greek culture, our Am HaNivcha status will be canceled out, will be finished, they already contaminated the Beis HaMikdash, what's left over here. So they realized that the only thing that might save them is to remember the promises we had in the Bris Ben HaBesara. And that is that Klai Yisrael, no matter what the world wants to do, is indestructible. And we say in our Haggadah, Shebechol Dar V'Dar, Oyim Lomai Chalaseinu, HaKadosh Baruch Matzim U'Yadam. If you look in the Haggadah, that paragraph is preceded by the Bris Ben HaBesara. That's what guarantees that Maim Chazal to be able to find total 100% certainty. The Chashonaim therefore realized that Klal Yisrael's future is at stake, but we were promised in the Bris Ben HaBesara that no guy is going to be able to destroy you if you act L'Shem Shemayim. Therefore that, and Michutz Miderach HaTeva promise said, we might be a few people, but Hashem gave us a promise that when you guys need it, I'll be there for you. And that gave them the impetus to take the initiative to fight something that normally for another country would have been a suicide war, something that's in a mission impossible. I mean, to this day, we still have a bunch in Afghanistan because a bunch of Taliban fighters are basically beating America over the head continuously. We can't get rid of them. And Russia tried before, so the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, you know, guerrilla fighters can do great things, but the Taliban are professional guerrilla fighters. The Chashmonaim were basically calling them in the base of Migdash, who didn't have any military training, and were not known to be bloodthirsty murderers. So the fact of the matter is, they had to really hook onto something to give them the courage to do what they did. And therefore, Parshas Vayeshev is read before Chanukah to show you the hashkafa, the mindset that made Yosef HaTzadik successful, that made Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov successful, and gave the Chashmonaim the guts to take on the Greek Empire, even though it seemed to be mission impossible. The fact of the matter is, not only do we read Vayeshev, but then we read Niketz, the Shabbos, we're still in Chanukah. The fact of the matter is, the story of Yosef, who was sold to be a slave in Egypt, within a couple of, I don't know whether it's years, becomes the second most powerful person in the Egyptian empire. That's not normal. That's not normal. All of a sudden, this guy was sold as a slave to the Sahar Tabachim and being put into prison after his wife was malshim upon him, and that alone is a miracle, to then end up becoming the most powerful man in Mitzrayim besides Paro. That's also. This Yosef seems to be indestructible. No matter what's thrown at him, he's surviving. And he's able to accomplish in his own personal success things that B'derech HaTeva don't apply. So Chazal pointed out, therefore, that both of these parshas give you an encapsulation of Hashem working behind the scenes of Mechutz M'Derech HaTeva with Nisim. When you're working with Shem Shemayim, Shem Shemayim Shargul B'Piv, there's no stop to how far you can go and succeed and what you have to accomplish. That's why these parshiyos serve as the bookend, so to speak, for the Yontov of Chanukah. Now, the fact of the matter is, if you look very carefully now, go back now, Rabbi Shem, momentarily now to the Al HaNisim. Let me just show you now exactly how what I just said, B'Shem the Chasam Sofer, is now articulated explicitly in the Al HaNisim. We make Matasya ben Yochan Kohen Gadol the Chashmonai Yubanav. Now, it starts off with a preface. These guys did not have military training. They were not part of the SEALs unit. They were not part of any type of special army unit. They were Kohanim. What do they know from Milchama? And all of a sudden, Malchus Yavan Rasha decides they're going to come against the Jews. Ashkichem Teresech La'avirim Mechukah Ritzanecha. Literally, to make us forget our Torah, we should violate all the mitzvahs of the Torah, we should convert to the basically the culture and the religion of the Greek Empire. So what happens over here? Their kavanah is l'shem shemayim. The Ribbono Sham now has to implement what he promised. Ata barachamecha rabim, you took on to make a miracle for us, and therefore malam ve'esa rasa, rafta rivam dantas dino, nakanti kamasa. There's no question that the Chashmonai Matasyo and his children didn't have the military prowess or capacities, equipment or knowledge or experience to defeat this army. So it was HaKadosh Baruch behind the scenes fulfilling the promises of the Bris Bain of a storm of indestructibility and also the fact Mechus Miderech HaTeva. And to highlight that, what is the pious say over here? You want to know how bad it was. Mosat the Giborim Biyad Chaloshim. These priests were Chaloshim. Hashem delivered the most powerful army on the face of this earth to the hands of Chaloshim. And even worse, Rabban Miyad Miyatim. How many Jewish fighters were there? And then a whole Greek army over there stationed. So you had, even if they were great fighters, but they were so outnumbered in equipment and arms and people, I mean, it was a mission impossible. But why did we succeed? So look what he continues further. Why did we succeed? Because who were the fighters? The Greeks were the Temeim, we were the Tahorim. They were Rishayim, and we were the Tzadikim. They were Zaydim, and we're Oiski Sarasecha. What does that mean? It means the spiritual commitment of Matasyahu, Ben Yochan Kohen Gadol, and the other Jewish fighters, where they were going with Shem Shemayim and they were spiritually worthy of Hashem performing the miracle, made them indestructible against all odds, performed the miracle Sholei B'derech HaTeva, so it's emphasized very explicitly of what really allowed us to do the mission impossible. And ultimately, what did Hashem do by doing this? Asish Hashem Gadol caused incredible Kiddush Shem Shemayim. Hashem showed the promise of the Bris Bain HaBesam once again in Jewish history coming to the fore to make a war that should have been impossible for the Jews to fight and to successfully win, something that became a reality because of Hashem's promises. So that caused a Kiddush Hashem, Ula'am Chisor Sisa Chua Gedola Porkin Kayom Azer. And afterwards the Kindleach came in, they went into the Beis HaMikdash, they purified it, etc. And they went on and they made a Halal Yichanak to celebrate. So when you look at the Ala Nisim, it really explains that the Kavanas that Yosef used, that he, his Dumus Yukno, and the Brisbane of the Serm Kavanos, they also used. And that's why they succeeded in something that B'derech HaTeb was a mission impossible. Now I come to the next question. The Nitzach and Milchama should have been successful enough to make the Yom Tov of Chanukah, the same way by Purim, you had them having a military victory against the adversaries in Persia, being the ultimate Makkah B'Patish in the Yom Tov of Purim for them to succeed and therefore have this as a Yom Tov. So the fact of the matter is, I asked before some of you came in, so why do we need two miracles by Chanukah? By Purim we only had one. Chanukah, the Nitzach HaMilchama, just described over here, Halav HaHidah, was a Nitzach HaMilchama. The miracle of Pach Shem is not even mentioned in the Amis. Not even mentioned. They lit the candles. It doesn't say miraculously. So the big question is, so what did the second Ness accomplish that the other one couldn't? And why is the essence of the Yom Tov HaChanukah always highlighted with the menorah burning? We should be talking about continuously the Nitzach and Milchama, the same way by the Megillah we talk about the Nitzach and of the Jews, Napachu, of killing our adversaries and winning the war over there. That should be the theme of Chanukah. But that's not the theme. The theme is menorah, menorah, menorah. Why? Why do we need the second miracle? That's not the machayev of halal v'hidah. The machamer is. So what do we need the pachshem for? So the one who answers this question, I'm going to end with his piece of opinion, is Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Rav Chaim asks a very simple question. He says, I want to understand something. Tell me how the Pach Shem miracle took place. Now he says, if you look at most of the Achron who described it, they found one little Pach that was good for one day. We just went to Mesechus Menachos, everything was Oiske Cheshben, you know, day to night, night to day, to burn for basically less than 24 hours. And that Pach should have lasted day one, and they should have expected that from that point on, the next 6-7 days until they become Torah from Tumas Emes, they're going to rely upon Tumas Dechuhut Ibn Tzibo for the purposes of lighting the menorah, which I mentioned initially you're allowed to do if you have no choice. Why and how did the Rabban Hashem do this miracle? So a lot of Mefarshim say they put the oil in and they saw it burning the entire night and expected in the morning for it to be empty when they came to replace it with Tamidik oil. All of a sudden, in the morning, after it burnt all night, and they saw it going less and less, they found a full pach, once again, munuch mezumen. And that happened 8 days in a row. So says Rav Chaim, if that's the pshat of the miracle that every night it emptied out, in the morning miraculously they found it filled up again, that means the oil that was in the menorah was miracle oil of an S. He said, there's only one problem. There's a halacha on the books. You can't perform mitzvah satera with miraculous things that are creating this world. And they quote the famous story of Avadya Hanavi who died and left an amana, and she was destitute financially. So she went to Elisha, and Elisha said, don't worry. You have oil, borrow thousands of kalim, pour that oil. She poured it out, had thousands of kalim of oil, miraculous miracle oil, sold it. She became a rich widow, and you know, but there's a radak over there. The radak says, in Teresh Lopez, she's turned to Elisha and says, I thank you for making me now a rich widow, but don't I have a chiyah to be mafresh trumas and ma'isus from all of this olive oil? I mean, I made a nice little killing over here, but how do I mafresh trumas and ma'isus now? So he says, this is miracle oil. You're not chayv in mitzvahs, there's no chiyah of trumas and ma'isus on this. Mitzvahs that are only things that are b'derech ha-teva, things shall live b'derech ha-teva, not shy for mitzvahs. So says Rav Chaim, if that's the case, if the oil kept on refilling itself miraculously each and every day, that oil was puzzle for the menorah. You can light with that oil. They should have used...
They lit the first night, so they were yotze.
They were yotze that night. But the rest of the time, they shouldn't have used the miracle oil. They should have used tamidik oil based upon tumah d'chuyut ben tzibur. They had a right to do. They had no right to use miracle oil.
Is there a mitzvah to extinguish whatever's in there to stop what's ever burning?
It's not burning. I said it burnt the whole night, and then find burning the next day. They found it filled with oil again, and they relit it. And miraculously refilled with oil, didn't burn, for 8 days straight, as the near tamid over here. So the fact of the matter is, every time they were lighting miracle oil, they were lighting oil that couldn't be used for the mitzvah. So says Reb Chaim, you know what really happened over here? Each day, the menorah burnt down only 1/8 of the oil. Now, how did that happen? I mean, they measured the oil in the wicks that they shall last X house it, that only 1/8 was used up every day of the original oil. So he says, the Rabbi Nishon performed the miracle b'derech ha-teva in natural law. What did he do for them? Every oil on the face of this earth, were you dealing with olive oil, or are you dealing with oil that we put in our cars, gasoline, has a natural burn rate that it's created with. But in our laboratories that we have today, in all the gas companies, all the petroleum companies and such, they have found out using scientific technology that you're able to change the burn rate. You can make it more efficient. You can literally fine-tune it, b'derech ha-teva, manipulating the molecules and the atoms of this phenomenon, b'derech ha-teva, as a scientist, as a specialist, to make this the most efficient burning oil to last as long as you possibly can. The Rabbi Nishlam, who created Teva, if they can do it in laboratories as human beings, Rabbi Nishlam surely could do it. So he did Bederech HaTeva, and he changed the burn rate of this Pach Shemen Bederech HaTeva, that it should be so efficient that the burn rate would therefore burn only 1/8 of the oil every night. Yeah. It wouldn't have to burn the whole oil to last. And there was enough oil with this oil that if it would not have gone out every morning, would have basically burned 8 days straight, because the oil was given a different burn quality rate in the getting rid of this specific oil and getting the energy and the light you wanted from it. So therefore, if that's the case, the oil that was in menorah was therefore natural oil. It diminished 1/8 each and every night. Okay? So he says, you know what the miracle of the Pach Shemen was? The chiddush of eichus overpowering kamos. Quality overcoming quantity. Now, in the menorah meant the quantity of the oil, which was minimal, was overpowered and enlarged by the quality of the burn rate that Rabban Hashem was mechadish b'derech HaTeva in the oil. Why did the Rabban Hashem do that miracle? He didn't have to. They didn't need it for the Yom-Tiv, and they didn't need it for... The answer is because there were some people who said upon the Nitzacha Muhammad that the reason they won, and to this very day in West Point they studied what the Maccabees did. They said, if you want to know what guerrilla warfare was able to do, they fought guerrilla warfare against the Greek army, and they were able to defeat it. The same way they bring a marshal, the Taliban defeated the Russians in Afghanistan many years ago, no matter what they threw at them. And America still fought blundered in Afghanistan, and we still can't get out of it. So there were Jews who did not believe that the Chanukah Nitzach HaMelchama was an S. It was a Kaychi Yadi, and it was a guerrilla warfare success. So the Rabbi Hashem wanted to perform one more miracle immediately afterwards to show them, the Ness of your guerrilla warfare was not a military success. It was like the Ness of Chanukah of the menorah, that Eichus was able to overcome Kamos. Quality over quantity. And how do we see it? If you look back in Avos Nisim, look at the comparison of what Hashem said. I was nokim lekmosim, I put gibarim biyat chaloshim, rabim biyat miyatim, but you know how this was done? Look at who was opposing who. You had temeim against tahorim, rishoyim against tzadikim, zeidim biyat oiski sosech. What is the piyut emphasizing? The quality of the Jewish soldier, that eichus, that spiritual quality gave him his gabris against a kamos of a more powerful enemy and a much larger army. So you had the ness of kamos being overpowered by eichus. The ness of the menorah, Chaim said, was a gilui to us how eichus can overpower kamos. It was created to give a gilui on the milchama that they were just menatzeach, that it was also because of kamos being overpowered by eichus. So the miracle of the Pach Shemen was a gilui, hashkafically and practically, in how the nitzachon of the milchama was won, and that is what gave us a better. But that's why they waited for a year for them to realize what happened and to combine both events to realize how the Pach Shemen and that miracle was the Magala on the Nitzach HaMelchama to realize what just happened over here. Don't give them credit, they were guerrilla warriors and they did an incredible job by doing such. This is the Yad HaShem where Eichus is Mizgaba over Kamos. That's what the menorah, that's the only way of describing the menorah reality. That's what happened in the Melchama. So the purpose there of the Pach Shemen miracle was the Megala how the Melchama took place, that it was a miraculous phenomenon. That's why we always emphasize the menorah part, because without the menorah part, the Nitzach and Melchama would be misunderstood as a military guerrilla warfare, as happens in world history to this very day. The guerrillas who know the territory can beat an invading army. So the Nes Pach Shemen is the Makkah B'Patish. In its essence, what Chaim says, That's Mazda, how we're supposed to look upon Hashkafa, Kli L'Molchama. But it's actually the Molchama itself that was the miracle that was Mechai Halav HaHedah. As I said before, B'Shem Namaral. So every question that I pose, if you think back for a couple of minutes, I answer tonight.
Right.
I explain why you needed both miracles. I explain why the Parsha is Medayontiv is sandwiched between Vayeshev and Miketz. I explain the relevance to the Brisbane Abbasarim, because at the end of the day, without that Brisbane Abbasarim, we could never have had the miracle of Muhammad of Chanukah ever taking place, or people even to have the chutzpah. They think there's even a possibility for them to accomplish this type of war. Quarav Yochanan ben Zakkai, when he came to buy Shemesh Chuvim, realized there was no way, B'derech HaTeva, even with Shem Shemaim and everything else, for you to be able to fight all the legions. They were stuck in the city, surrounded from all sides. There was no possibility of doing any guerrilla warfare. I mean, all this other maneuverings that they were able to do by Chanukah, you couldn't do when you're surrounded by the Roman legions from every direction, as Debach they confronted when it came to Baal Sheni. So Chemizak decided he was going to try to negotiate rather than commit a suicide war. Over here, this war didn't have to be suicidal because the technicalities of how we were going to fight it as a guerrilla warfare with an army that wasn't the size of the Roman army and they weren't surrounded from all sides in a city. The ability to maneuver over here was much easier than the ability to maneuver when it came to the Baal Sheni confrontation. That's why they took the chance over here. They didn't take the chance when it came to Baal Sheni fighting the whole Roman world when they're surrounded from all sides. So therefore, that's why the way they partook and dealt with this issue was different.
Or maybe they're spiritually, they're at a different level, so they were really... So their quality...
You're dealing over here with Gedolei HaTanaim, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, and those Gedolim. There were plenty of tzaddikim at that generation that were on the same daga, I mean, maybe even more than those of it's the same. It's the Second Temple period. Chanukah was in the beginning of the Second Temple period. This was the end. So you already had the Tekufas HaTanoim, you had the Gedolim. I mean, you're talking about yeshivas had grown, Torah had grown in Eretz Israel from the beginning of Baal Sheni to the end. By the time Baal Sheni was destroyed, the amount of Torah, the amount of yeshiva light, the amount of Torah Shel Peh, I mean, on that level, there's no comparison to what was happening over there in the beginning of Baal Sheni and the end of Baal Sheni.
It wasn't destroyed because they didn't have yeshiva.
What?
It was destroyed because they didn't have Ben Adam HaFaver.
You had a sin of Schinim problem. That's why the Gzer ultimately was put against them. But I'm pointing out to militarily, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai still felt that he could not rely upon their tzidkus, he couldn't rely upon the Haftarah B'Sbasarim to try to fight a war, especially when you had these chevra inside Yerushalayim destroying all their food supplies, destroying all their ammunition. They were put in a desperate strait, the Gemara says, that made it impossible even to survive if they wanted to survive. So the fact of the matter is, the events took place as they took place, but without the Bris Bein HaBesarim, the Nes HaChanukah could not have taken place in every dimension. And that's what I want to share with you tonight, Rabbi Yisai. That's the essence of tonight's shiur. And the Musa Shemuz is Bizman HaZeh, Rabbi Yisai, our success in Eretz Israel. The more Torah, the more yeshivas that open up, the more seminaries, the more people that are learning there. Eretz Israel has grown from what it was to what it is now. As Torah grows and Frumkeit increases, yeah, the success and Hatzlach of Eretz Yisrael is incredible. I mean, even militarily now. I mean, the fact of the matter is, one of the, you know, on a military level, if they really wanted to use their kaychis, there wouldn't be a Hamas and a Hezbollah anymore. They're just afraid to start a world war now, which they could, but they don't want to be blamed because they realize, you know, America's here now, maybe Trump's helping them, but who knows if Trump's going to be there tomorrow and who's going to take over this in the Congress. They're trying to play it smart. But the fact of the matter is that Eretz Yisrael, on an economic, spiritual, military, in 70 years plus, what we were able to accomplish
has probably never been done before.
Never been done in world history before. And all of a sudden, Egypt needs us as their Lord Protector. And so the Arabian, our biggest sign of now relying upon Eretz Yisrael to protect. I mean, it's impossible. It's not before.
They're planning on the wrecking.
So the answer is, we have to realize that Hashem promised us these promises, Brisk Behem HaBesarim, that's what's keeping us going. Ad HaYom HaZeh, we see it. Sometimes it's more obvious, sometimes it's less obvious. And that's what we have to take with us to tell people it's not Kochav Yotzim Yodi, it's the Rebbeinu behind the scenes, it's Eichus over Kamos.
And that's
going to continue keeping us until Mashiach comes.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.